Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
It's time for Spiritual Awakening Radio. My name is James Bean. My website is spiritualawakeningradio.com. Thanks for joining me on this week's program, which is another installment in my ongoing series exploring the ups and downs of searching for a spiritual path, approaching spiritual paths as part of the great search, the great quest for reality, discovering the meaning of life, and a spiritual path that you may resonate with. So this is an ongoing series, hopefully with some good advice, tips, and insights into this process of approaching spiritual traditions or paths or teachers. Spiritual Awakening Radio explores the world of spirituality, comparative religion, world scriptures, and other books that matter, East and West, God, meditation, near-death experiences, Ahimsa ethics, nonviolence in thought, word, and deed, including in the area of diet, as in vegan or vegetarian diet, education for a more peaceful planet. There's only one time when it is essential to awaken. That time is now. From my mission statement, there's not just one religion, there are thousands. After years of being concerned that too few voices, too few points of view, we're getting heard when it comes to spiritual paths and world religions, that the radio airwaves were not reflecting the diversity that really exists, I started producing my own programs, exploring the world of spirituality, comparative religion, meditation, mysticism, and books, bringing to the airwaves the gentle voices of saints, the wisdom of masters or mystics, world scriptures, sacred texts, the great spiritual traditions and classics of the East and the West. My name is James Bean. Welcome to Spiritual Awakening Radio. Before I get to the subject at hand today, I wanted to mention this news story. ISIS destroyed a 4th century Iraqi Christian monastery and library. Islamic State militants say they destroyed an ancient Mar Banam monastery. That's apparently the name of it, Mar Banam Monastery in northern Iraq. The monastery dates back to the 4th century AD and reportedly had one of the most valuable Syriac Aramaic libraries in existence, unquote. So that destruction, that senseless destruction of an ancient library, reminds me of some other parallel accounts in human history. The work of the demiurge, the false god of the matrix, the ego, the cosmic ego of A Course in Miracles, the demiurge of this world, his work is all about oppressing souls. Not long ago, in celebration of Matsugur Day, which is the celebration of the martyrdom of the Gnostic Cathars of France, I was sharing with some people a talk by Robert Bly, where he was talking about the oppressive relationship that sometimes when you have this time of enlightenment and souls are free to follow their path, sometimes you have these oppressive forces that bring the party to an end. And it almost sounded like a cosmic conspiracy. And he talked about World War One and the Holocaust and wiping out of all of these Jewish Kabbalah mystics. And just, you know, this sort of thing happens from time to time. As with the burning of the Library of Alexandria in Egypt, the censorship of early Christian, Jewish, and Gnostic texts in the Roman Empire under Constantine and later Emperor Archons. This modern-day destruction of this Syriac Aramaic library in northern Iraq is indeed a modern-day version of the same tragedy of destroying knowledge, the innocent souls and community behind that knowledge as well. One wonders what Syriac Aramaic writings might have been kept at this monastic library and now may be forever lost. An Aramaic copy of the Gospel of Thomas or Gospel of Mary Magdalene, more spiritual classics by St. Isaac of Nineveh, out-of-this-world discourses of Joseph the Visionary and other Syriac mystics of the East. Who knows? This monastery, the keepers of those writings in the monastery may not have even known what they had in the library. You know, it's a 4th century AD library of ancient Aramaic texts. They may not have even known what they had there. Or if they did, if they are of a fairly orthodox orientation, it may very well be that they didn't want to release to the public certain things, like, for instance, if they had documents that they considered heretical or writings that were considered not scripture according to their tradition, but nevertheless they had copies of them, they may not have felt the need to do anyone any favors by publishing those things. I'm under the impression that sometimes monastic libraries have copies of things, like the Vatican Library, like the libraries on top of Mount Athos in Greece, owned and operated by Eastern Orthodox denominations. They've got lots of interesting stuff, but if they have a secret Gospel of Mark or some other heretical quote-unquote text, they may just want to keep it hidden away, you know. They may not want to share it with the world and do heretics a favor. But they have all of these writings, so who knows? Who knows what might be in libraries like the one that was just destroyed in northern Iraq? It's all happened before. The Library of Alexandria, the hiding of the Nag Hammadi Library, the hiding away of texts, or the burning of texts, the destruction of texts. On this program a while back, I had as a guest Sebastian Brock, the world's leading scholar of Syriac Aramaic texts. He probably actually went to that library in northern Iraq, or certainly was familiar with it, and many similar texts. He works with texts like that all of the time. He published a book called The Syriac Fathers on Prayer and the Spiritual Life. It's published by Cistercian Publications and represents a wonderful collection of some of the surviving Syriac Aramaic mystical texts, thankfully forever preserved, not destroyed by ISIS, in other words, some of the writings already translated into English. The Syriac Fathers on Prayer and the Spiritual Life, I think of as a very special book, kind of like the Dead Sea Scrolls or Nag Hammadi Gnostic Gospels or the Corpus Hermeticum, or the Upanishads. In other words, it's an anthology of the writings and wisdom of a whole community of people in one volume, a very special volume. The Philokalia of Eastern Orthodoxy would be another one like that, or the Sri Guru Granth Sahib, or Sikh Scriptures of India, another such collection of many sages and mystics of an entire community, all bound together. Well, the focus of this week's program, once again, is, in this ongoing series, Approaching Spiritual Paths, Sorting Out Spiritual Traditions, the Ups and Downs of Searching for a Spiritual Path. One of the key things is the question of origins. I became the heretic I am today by asking questions like, where did this all come from? You know, did the Bible really fall from the sky and was caught by a guy by the name of King James sometime a few centuries ago? Not the case, after all, it turns out. So who put together the Bible? Was it Jesus and the apostles up all night in a night of prayer and and fasting and decided to select certain writings and reject others? No, didn't happen like that at all. It was a much more human and political type process. And it leaves you forever changed when you look into that and discover the reality of that. It's good to ask where things have come from. It may lead you to some interesting new places you didn't know existed. And so too with a spiritual teacher. If there's someone who is a spiritual teacher, they give talks and they say they studied at the feet of a certain teacher in the Himalayas or, you know, a member of the Great White Brotherhood of Ascended Masters with no forwarding address or P.O. box in the Himalayas, or claim to have some sort of connection to some older tradition or other teacher, it's good to look into that question of origins. Where does that teacher get their knowledge from? Who is the teacher of the teacher, or who was the teacher of the teacher? And, you know, research that connection really well early on before joining or a path or following a teacher and say, hey, what was it like to follow your teacher? Hey, teacher, what was it like to follow your teacher? And if you get a sense that they are celebrating the connection they have with their teacher, that they have a warm connection with their spiritual teacher, then that's a good thing. That's a good sign. But if you bring up the subject of who was your teacher, what are the origins of these teachings you are giving, this form of meditation, this form of yoga, whatever it might be, and you get sort of a deafening silence or are told to stop asking questions, or you get this sense of it being awkward to ask those sorts of questions, then that is a red flag. That is a major point of concern right there. If it's an awkward, embarrassing subject, too hot to handle, controversial, you know, can of worms, then now's the time to ask those questions and find out and, you know, go to Wikipedia, Google the name of the teacher and see if you can get perhaps an alternative history or alternative take on where those teachings come from. You may discover that so-and-so of the Great White Brotherhood of Ascended Masters really doesn't have a forwarding address, doesn't really have a P.O. box in the Himalayas by the big rock up the trail. That, in fact, that may not even be someone that really exists, or that the teacher had a very awkward and cold, frosty, and distant relationship with their teacher. And that's the reality of it. Good to know at the beginning, not 20 years later after you've donated thousands of dollars and been following, you know, embracing a teaching and path and practice, you know, decade after decade. The time to find that out is at the very beginning of the stage of searching for a spiritual teacher. Now, that sort of awkwardness about origins, where did these teachings come from? What happened at the beginning? How did we get to where we are? Who was the teacher of the teacher? Where did the Bible come from? Who put it together? And when? And have all of the books always been the same? Or are there some now that we're missing, are missing that used to be? That's very much at the heart of that sort of discussion. You know, you can have about any religion, really. Who are those magi bearing gifts to the newborn child Christ? They're followers of the Zoroastrian religion. Well, you'd never know that when you listen to a lot of Christian teachings. You'd never know that the wise men of the East were followers of Zoroaster, fluent in the Gathas, the scriptures of the prophet Zoroaster. So sometimes one religion doesn't really like to talk about connections to other religions. But why not, I say? Zoroaster was a very impressive prophet, and his teachings were very nice. I enjoy reading the Gathas. So So what if the three wise men, or however many there were, 2 or 4 or 17, so what if they were followers of Zoroaster? I don't have a problem with that. I don't see why anyone else should either. But sometimes there are awkwardnesses, if that's even a word. The prophet John the Baptist is treated in the New Testament is an example of an awkwardness. John the Baptist was a mentor of Christ, an initiating master. Jesus goes to him and is baptized. But the text has this weird, you know, the Gospel of John has this weird sort of dance that it does that sort of de-emphasizes John. I mean, he's supposedly the elder and the mentor, and yet he's sort of turned into the warm-up act, sort of the, you know, late 70s Van Halen warming up for the great Led Zeppelin instead of being really great in their own right. Sort of thing, kind of a weird demotion, which doesn't ring true. And that's another example of a weirdness or an awkwardness between one path and another path. So that's something to always look for in a spiritual tradition, any sort of awkwardness about the past and any influences on one's tradition. And, you know, who was the teacher of the teacher? Is there a warm, loving connection? Is the teacher of the teacher someone who is highly regarded, celebrated, that connection, you know, often quoted, perhaps even their photo or a picture or portrait hanging in the ashram or a hall where teachings are being presented or a workshop being given? Or is it a frosty, cold relationship that's awkward, that is not to be brought up? Please do not ask any questions about the teacher of the teacher or the background of the teacher. I say yes, fair game. Do indeed ask questions about how the teacher became a teacher, how it is he or she is now a teacher, and where did they study, where did they get their teachings from, and what is the nature of that connection. When you ask those kind of questions, you never know where it might lead. You might also become a heretic, or are stopped from joining a cult, or it may lead you to something else that you like better. You never know. You never can tell. It might lead you to something nicer, you know, a more advanced kind of thing. So those are questions to look into. I realize that most people are not very scholarly, and sometimes religious traditions or spiritual paths are a little on the anti-science side of things and anti-academic. They think, you know, we don't need to focus all in the mind all the time. Or all meditation, by definition, is all about transcending the mind. And that's perfectly fine, you know, during spiritual practice to transcend mind and matter. But, you know, I find academic scholars to be very spiritual and mystical, because they're not paid yes men saying, well, yes, God really is a Trinity, and yes, people do walk on water and come back from the dead, and the diseases are healed, and the canon of scripture is absolutely 100% correct, and everything, every I that's dotted, every T that is crossed, is all just fine the way it is. Now can I go cash my check, please? So scholars are independent and will just be about researching what the truth of the matter might be when it comes to the question of history, the history of a religion, the development of a spiritual tradition. And they're not paid necessarily to be yes men, to be theologians saying, why, yes, everything is just fine, sir. They may indeed say all sorts of other things about controversies and disputes, and some say this and some say that, or the King James Version of the Bible included several other books that are no longer there now. and be willing to talk about that, willing to mention that. So I actually, even though history is very dry and boring, and scholars can also be very dry and boring, I find sometimes reading historic kind of books, scholarly kind of books, can be very liberating because they may quote something really wonderful, and you can find that spiritual poetry and new ideas about sources for meditation and mystical teachings. And, you know, it comes from honest scholars who are just simply researching truth, whatever that may be, wherever that may lead, you know, without regard to anyone's sacred cows and orthodoxy. So scholars can be very valuable. And a critical look at a tradition can be a just divine, wonderful thing if it keeps you out of trouble and leads to something higher, another road one can take. Well, a lot more coming up after the break, more about approaching spiritual paths, the ups and the downs, the ups and the downs of searching for a spiritual path. Once again, on this week's edition of Spiritual Awakening Radio, stay tuned.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us. Vegan, make peace, be good to the planet, and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on our plate. If you want to please your taste buds while promoting love and harmony with the earth, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants all over the U.S. and around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain on the planet, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To see what's on the menu at the Loving Hut near you, go to this website, lovinghut.us. Once again, the web address is lovinghut.us.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Spiritual Awakening Radio is heard every week at this time. My name is James Bean, and it's great being here. My website is spiritualawakeningradio.com. You can contact me with any questions or comments or requests for information by emailing me at this address, james at spiritualawakeningradio.com. There's a donate button on my website as well, PayPal donate button, spiritualawakeningradio.com. At my website, I've got links to daily spiritual quotes through social media, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, many articles, many blogs, lots there. Links to podcasts at spiritualawakeningradio.com. Scientists keep on researching. Academic voices that are independent from religious institutions that don't get a paycheck from those institutions keep on keeping on, giving us honest answers about the life and times of Jesus of Nazareth or Buddha, Mahavira, Guru Nanak, Tulsi Sahib of Hathras, Swamiji, Maharaj, whoever it might be, all of the world religions and great traditions of spirituality, Sufism, Kabbalah, the Sant tradition, whatever it might be, Hinduism, Buddhism. Give us honest answers in your search for truth. Academic kind of writings may be kind of dry and boring, but at least they're trying to arrive at something called truth. And truth is another name for God. And so it's good to value those academic voices. I think sometimes they are going to help save the day. Can be very liberating. Or at the very least, in their footnotes, have some quotes from some amazing books, which may be indeed spiritual, mystical, great poetry, you know. So they may be providing great leads. So Galileo, keep looking through your telescope and tell us what you see. If there are dinosaur bones under the crust of the earth, no problem. Fossil record, tell us more. Charles Darwin, keep on researching the origin of species. Isn't it weird? You know, we're kind of at this place where some are very anti-science, but from my perspective, criticizing the theory of evolution is a kind of blasphemy. If you don't like how God did it, take it up with him, right? You know, we're just trying to find out what's going on in the universe and researching the truth, finding evidence, real demonstrable evidence for that truth. So if there's something that's true, it should be closer to the divine than something that is blatantly not true. So academic freedom, poke and prod, keep on asking questions, question authority, and buy those heretical books that ask forbidden questions. I want to focus a little bit on exclusivity. Is the truth, speaking of truth, is truth something that can be copywritten by one particular sect? We got the truth. We can't help it if we're better than everyone else because we got the truth. Copyright 90 AD, all rights reserved. Is truth something that can be copywritten or exclusively the property of a certain sect? There are sects that are like that, and I think that's also something to be watchful for. The concept of exclusivity. Gravity only works here. The laws of physics only apply here. The divine realm is only available through us. If they say things like that, you gotta wonder, because as I conceive of truth, it is a universal thing. It would apply in China, Tibet, Madagascar, or the other side of the galaxy. Like the laws of physics, gravity, the speed of light. Anything that's true will be true everywhere and cannot be narrowly copywritten or under the domain of a particular sect. There can be an avenue for individuals to truth through a certain sect or teacher, a kind of lifeline, a specific contact, a community one can join and derive great spiritual benefit from. But I really do have a problem with anyone making exclusive claims to truth, the sole voice of God on planet Earth in these latter days. There's a lot of people like that out there that are each claiming to be the one voice of truth. And so I think exclusivity is a problem. I love this passage. It's found in an Ebionite gospel commenting about another religion and how this other religion in this other country has truth. The following passage is from a book called The Recognitions of Clement. This Ebionite Christian Jewish author has very nice things to say about those in India who worship one God, follow peaceful customs and laws, and are vegetarian. Imagine he is seeing parallels between his own religion and that of his brothers and sisters in the country of India. This is one of the most amazing passages I know of in the extra-canonical scriptures, a rare example in human history of one religion, Ebionite or Hebrew Christianity, recognizing divine truth in another religion, Hinduism, from India. A rare interfaith moment in human history, which otherwise is filled with lots of people that claim exclusive truth, copyright 90 AD, all rights reserved. The Recognitions of Clement says, "There are likewise amongst the Bactrians in the Indian countries immense multitudes of Brahmins who also themselves are from the tradition of their ancestors, have peaceful customs and laws, neither murder nor commit adultery nor worship idols, nor have they the practice of eating animal food, are never drunk, never do anything maliciously, but always revere God, the Supreme Being." I was so blown away by that quote when I first found it, because when you study comparative religion, you get used to people saying, well, we've got the truth over here, somebody's got to have it right, and no one else does, and glad we do. So here you have an example of one religion seeing parallel truths going on in another religion in another country. I just find that so refreshing and unusual. Stay tuned for more Spiritual Awakening Radio after these messages.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us.
There's a reason why ADT is America's leading home security company. Since 1874, they've helped protect over 5 million homes. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the ADT banner. It's more affordable than you think.
Be vegan, make peace, be good to the planet, and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on our plate. If you want to please your taste buds while promoting love and harmony with the earth, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants all over the U.S. and around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain on the planet, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To see what's on the menu at the Loving Hut near you, go to this website, lovinghut.us. Once again, the web address is lovinghut.us.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back to Spiritual Awakening Radio. My name is James Bean. SpiritualAwakeningRadio.com is the website. James@SpiritualAwakeningRadio.com is my email address. The ups and downs of searching for a spiritual path. The theme, an ongoing theme of various shows as of late. Approaching spiritual traditions. Not long ago, speaking of the Ebionite Christians who are vegetarians and seeing good things about India, my belief is that some of those Greek sages were directly influenced by people from India. There are references to India in many ancient writings. There are references to India in the Corpus Semiticum in the Nag Hammadi Library. Of course, I just shared one from the Anti-Nicene Fathers, the source of the book Recognitions of Clement, which is an Ebionite gospel, a Hebrew gospel. And there are other references, too. I believe there actually were Buddhists in Alexandria, Egypt, and probably some ancient scriptures of the East in the Library of Alexandria long ago, once upon a time. Apollonius of Tyana was a contemporary of Christ, and I was doing a little bit of research recently on Apollonius of Tyana. G.R.S. Mead, the famous theosophical translator of Gnostic texts and other Western mystical writings, has a book on the life of Apollonius of Tyana. Apollonius of Tyana was a vegetarian and was against the idea of any form of animal sacrifice, which is something that actually went on, believe it or not, back 2,000 years ago in both a Jewish and pagan context in the Roman world. He was a strict vegetarian, it says. The only fitting sacrifice for God, according to Apollonius of Tyana, was man's best reason. Reason. Age of reason. Going on there in the life and teachings of Apollonius of Tyana 2,000 years ago. Apollonius of Tyana said, all people, so I believe, belong to the family of God and are of one nature. Everyone experiences the same emotions, regardless of the place of a person's birth, whether he or she is barbarian or Greek, so long as they are a human being. Quote from Apollonius of Tyana. I also noticed that Apollonius of Tyana meditated three times a day. Three times a day, Apollonius prayed and meditated, first at daybreak, then again at midday. I'm reading from the G.R.S. Mead book about Apollonius. At daybreak, he meditated and prayed, also at midday and at sundown. This seems to have been his invariable custom, no matter where he was. This concept of meditating three times a day also can be found in India. This is very much an Indian custom. The thrice daily meditation. The following is from the teachings of Sri Bhagirath Baba of the Maharishi Mehi Ashram, a Sant Mat Ashram in Kupagut, Bhagalpur in Bihar district, India. The practitioner, if he sits for meditation, always must keep his or her neck, head, and spinal cord, or back, completely straight. The respiration process will naturally become slowed if one sits straight, and thus it is a helping factor in meditation. Saints and yogis have fixed times of meditation. These times are in the pre-dawn, 2, after taking a bath during the day or midday, and 3, during the evening after the sun sets. Meditation done in these three times is the thrice daily meditation. A practitioner sits for meditation at these three times. And he also goes on to talk about doing a very brief meditation just before falling asleep, as if to go into a meditative state in sleep and have good dreams, have more positive dreams during sleep. If sleep can be turned into a meditation that's 6 hours or 7 hours a day, that could be put to good use, right? If you can make that happen. And so a brief meditation just before you doze off, he says, also can help. So once again, in the East and in the West, advocating meditating three times per day, morning, noon, and again in the evening hours. That's a wonderful concept to spiritualize the day. Now, another universal practice you'll find East and West is the repetition of a sacred word, a mantra, a sacred name. This is a tradition that you find in Eastern Orthodoxy. It's called the Jesus Prayer, or Prayer of the Name. Sufism calls it zikr, the remembrance of God, by singing or chanting names of God. There can be vocal zikr or mental zikr. You chant in your mind certain names to practice remembering God by repeating his name or many names. And in the Sant tradition and in Sikh tradition, it's called Simran, which has the same identical meaning as the word zikr. It means remembrance. Remembering God in a world of forgetfulness. The repetition of a sacred word or name of God is a way to immediately return to a kind of meditative state instantly. During the day, whenever you have a free moment, maybe not while driving down the highway, texting and driving is bad, and so is meditating and driving. That would not be a good thing to be doing until we all have Google cars that drive themselves. Then it's okay. But whenever you have a free moment, one can take a Simran break or a Zikr break, a prayer of the name break, a mantra break. And just for a couple of minutes or a few minutes or whatever you can get away with, return to your sacred word, and you can have a touch of meditation wherever you are. You know, during work or wherever you are, whatever you're doing, any time of the day or the evening. The prayer of the name as a practice, not only during meditation, but as a practice in its own right. As a spiritual technique, as a way to recenter, to refocus wherever you are, anytime. That's another spiritual practice done by the mystical schools of spirituality. Stay tuned for more Spiritual Awakening Radio after these messages. Loving Hut is the fastest growing chain of animal-free gourmet vegan restaurants all over the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a healthy, sustainable, planet-friendly, plant-based diet. All mouth-watering items on the menu are 100% vegan. In the Atlanta area, visit Loving Hut at 6385 Spalding Drive, Norcross, Georgia. To see what's on the menu, get driving directions or other information, go to lovinghut.us/Georgia. lovinghut.us/Georgia. And at Facebook, the address is facebook.com/lovinghutga. That's facebook.com/lovinghutga.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Spiritual Awakening Radio is heard every week at this time. My name is James Bean. You can contact me by email. My address is james@spiritualawakeningradio.com. Visit my website where you can access podcasts. There's a donate button there, articles, blogs, social media, daily spiritual quotes, lots there to read at the website, spiritualawakeningradio.com. Hope you're enjoying this series on the ups and the downs of searching for a spiritual path, a most vexing quest For the brave of heart, Kabir described the true spiritual seeker as a spiritual warrior, someone that doesn't get easily misled, manipulated, doesn't easily tire, give up, or settle for just anything. They are the spiritual warrior. They're on the case. They're not giving up. They're not easily satisfied until they achieve the result that they need, the spiritual warrior, on this spiritual quest, this search for God, this search for enlightenment. Spiritual traditions, world religions, very complicated. I hope you've enjoyed this series thus far and perhaps have found some helpful suggestions, things to watch out for. Sectarian truth is not necessarily truth. Spiritual truth is universal, I believe, something that anyone can or has the potential to experience. Sometimes truth is more out in the open during some times than at other times, or in some places than in other places. But everyone can see something. Everyone can hear something. Everyone can perceive something. Even when blind, we can all feel parts of that elephant. The elephant is a real elephant, and we are all perceiving imperfectly, but nonetheless perceiving. Truth is a universal thing that can be experienced in Tibet, Madagascar, Greece, or on the other side of the galaxy. There is no sect that can hoard the truth. Copyright 90 AD, all rights reserved. They can't do that. Truth is universal, like the laws of physics, gravity, the speed of light, whether it's here or the other side of the galaxy. Truth is a universal thing, not a sectarian thing. Other things to remember. Who was the teacher of your teacher? Was it a fictitious character in a book that came out in the 60s, an ascended master with no forwarding address from Tibet? Is there an awkward relationship with that teacher, a frosty, cold, and distant one? If you bring up the subject, who was the teacher of your teacher? Do you get a real answer? Or are you told that that's a distraction to your meditation? Go back to meditating, don't ask questions. Or is there an above-board, honest, acknowledged, warm connection between the current teacher and their teacher? Where does the teaching come from? What's the history of a path or religion or group? You never know what might happen when you pull on that thread, where it may lead. You may become a heretic, but hopefully a happy heretic, well-informed. When you ask those kind of questions, it's always good to keep on asking those sorts of questions. Another principle is that truth and the flow of information and academic freedom, those are good things. Let the knowledge fly. Let the access be granted. What's behind that locked door? What's in that hidden gospel? What is that secret book about Rumi? I want to know. I want to have that book. I want to know the answer. I want to have access to what's behind that hidden or locked door. Also, is what you're being taught by a path, is it about you and your life, your direct access to God in the here and now, or is it about other people and their stuff? I mean, sure, knowing about a dead extraterrestrial in someone's freezer in the Pacific Northwest might be entertaining or, might be sort of interesting, I suppose. Or prophecies about great things happening in the by and by, like pie in the sky. But does it affect you in your life, in your world, in the here and now? Is it about you? Is it a kingdom of God that is a present tense kingdom of God that you are being presented with, that can be accessed here in the present tense? Or is everything all out of reach, up in the sky, in the by and by, in the past, in the future, but never here, never now? Is the focus about you and the spiritual quest and your direct access to the Supreme Being now, here, in the present moment? Not necessarily a self-centered, me, narcissistic path, trolling for disciples in the West. There is that, too, going on out there. Please like us. We're all about trying to make you millionaires and a prosperity gospel. I don't mean that, but is the focus something that is beneficial to the spiritual seeker in the here and now? Or is it about listening to how great someone once was, or good things will happen someday in the future. But never anything much of anything worth of consequence happening right now. Also, truth is not only not sectarian, but truth is something that's not subject to time. In other words, human beings for thousands of years have been struggling, have been trying to meditate to overcome the distracting thoughts of the mind, to gain enlightenment, to access the beyond. You know, nothing new under the sun. Each generation has been on this quest. Truth is not new. If you want to know about the effects of various plants that are growing in the Amazon rainforest, who do you ask? You ask the people that live there, the indigenous population that has been working with those herbs and plants for many generations. They are the source of wisdom. They have much wisdom to offer, much insight to offer. And so, too, I tend to favor old schools of spirituality that have been around for a long time as the source of wisdom. Those are called the wisdom traditions. And I'm much less trusting of the newfangled religion that was invented last Tuesday, dedicated to the mothership hidden behind the comet. Don't know about those guys, but Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, the Sants, the Sufis, the Kabbalah, Jewish mystics, and contemplative mystics of the ages, tried and true, meaningful to many, generation after generation, been around for a while, called by many wisdom traditions. Those are, I think, the healthiest places to look for a spiritual path. For a spiritual awakening, I'm James Bean.
Save the planet and please your taste buds at the same time with Vegetarian House. You can't find a wider array of delicious international cuisine at an affordable price than the Vegetarian House restaurant in San Jose, California. Its wide array of organic vegan food even includes raw dishes, egg-free desserts, and non-alcoholic cocktails. As more and more people around the world adopt a plant-based diet, Vegetarian House shows how compassionate food choices can be a delicious way to promote peace and a sustainable planet. For more information, go to www.vegetarianhouse.us. Once again, the web address is www.vegetarianhouse.us. Be good to the planet and please your palate at the same time. Peace begins on your plate. If you want to please your palate while still promoting love and harmony with the planet, look for the opening of a Loving Hut restaurant near you. Loving Hut is a new chain of animal-free gourmet restaurants around the world. Loving Hut provides a practical starting point for those wishing to make the noble transition to a plant-based diet. Currently the fastest-growing vegan fast food chain in the world, Loving Hut opened its first branch in Milpitas, California, in July of 2008. To learn more, go to www.lovinghut.us. Once again, the address is www.lovinghut.us.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Spiritual Awakening Radio is heard every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, which is noon Pacific Time. Also on Sundays at noon Eastern, which is 9 a.m. Pacific Time. At HealthyLife.net, click on the Archive tab, scroll down, and you'll discover that there are many editions of Spiritual Awakening Radio there that you can click on and listen to anytime on demand. There are also podcasts of the program available through HealthyLife.net. Visit my website, SpiritualAwakeningRadio.com. From there you can send me an email if you like. And at Facebook, the address is Facebook.com/SpiritualAwakeningRadio. Where you'll find links to recently archived programs, spiritual quotes, and news about upcoming shows. For Spiritual Awakening, I'm James Bean.